It is Tuesday, February 5th, 2019, at 7:05 PM. We are starting our council meeting here in the City of Crystal Community Center. We are going to start with a pledge given by Councilmember Lee, and I will get to the council.
Our allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
From the public, we have the opportunity to have some meetings together tonight to discuss the needs of our city. We're grateful for the city and the people, and we ask you to bless us that as we discuss these issues, that we will have open hearts and minds, that we can make decisions that are best for the residents of the city. These are two very important things to discuss. All right, I need an approval of the agenda.
I'll make a motion that we approve the agenda as it's.
Motion made by Councilmember Geddes, is there a second?
Second.
Second by Councilmember Miller, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? So we'll move on to item number three, which is public comment. I don't see anybody here, so we will close that portion and move on to items four and five, city reports, starting with Mr. Bigwood.
Yeah, our ski bus program started last week. I guess there was a couple of hiccups on Snowbird's end, but we think we've got them ironed out. So we look forward to the next 2 weeks going smoothly. Probably the biggest announcement I could make is that we're now proudly serving Coca-Cola. So come over to the grill, get a Diet Coke. And then staff's been working, and I appreciate the work that Greg's staff has done on this. As you know, on Martin Luther King Day, we had an incident where our golf course driving range portions of it blew over. They're working with some companies, and we're working with our insurance company to try to get that fixed in order to be open and ready to go at the start of golf season. So right now we're still collecting some information. But that's all I have.
Thank you. Councilmember?
Yes. Report.
Councilmember Anderson, I have nothing to report. The only two things that I have, we did have a lengthy public safety meeting, and the two things that we discussed that pertain to Cedar Hills. First of all, they did approve the final agreement for us to leave. So we have a general idea of the buyout number. We won't have an exact number until probably September.
It's about 60 days after the close of the financial year.
Right. So one of the things that they did at this last meeting was approve the purchase of the vehicle. So obviously the asset has to be related. So we won't have the exact number until about September, but you have a general idea what it's going to be. So that was approved. And they also agreed to provide compensation now to the executive director, assistant director, but we did make sure that it was with an adjustment within the existing budget, not adding on funds to the existing budget. So I think that was a good one that we were going to ask. And then I did attend the Utah Housing Gap Coalition meeting this last month, and they've been working with the Commission on Housing Affordability on a new bill this legislative session. The Salt Lake Chamber and the CEO of Ivory Homes posted on that commission. They really wanted to make it so that way cities that didn't implement these, I think it's about 15 items that you can implement your city to qualify for moderate income housing. And they wanted it in the bill that if you didn't comply, that the state could revoke your class PNC road funds. Fortunately, Senator Enright and everybody else on the commission. So that was a horrible idea, not the way to go. And instead, what they're doing is they're trying to set up cities to do it by saying, if you adopt two of these provisions, then you're eligible for transportation funding. We, in our moderate income housing plan, already have implemented two of those items, so we're on solid ground, even though I can't see a time where we're ever going to be eligible for that funding. But it shows the state legislature that we're doing our part as a city with what we can do. And then legislatively, we are staying on top of bills that are being presented, getting feedback. They really encourage Denise and Brian and I went to the local officials day, and so they really encourage anyone of you, if you have questions or concerns about any of the bills, to reach out to Cameron or Rachel, and they will make sure that they're compliant with and sharing those with legislators, and also reach out to Senator Brammer and, sorry, Senator Hammer and Representative Brown if any thoughts you have on this as well. But Chandler and I will watch it, and we'll just share with you anything that comes up that we feel like we really need a lot of push. Councilmember Ellsworth.
We had a family festival meeting on the 31st. The family festival will be held June 3rd through 8th. We're bringing back a lot of the same things, but we have some modifications to a couple of the activities, such as the great race and style activity disorders, being done by more ages. And they're always looking for more sponsors and volunteers. So more information on that will be coming. They're going to the Instagram account to put the word out there on what's going on.
Councilmember Miller? Councilmember Green? All right. We'll move on to item number six, which is review action and public hearing on approval of a storage facility in Taco Bell, the part of the Cedar Hills Gated Commercial Subdivision located approximately 9968 Northwest and SC1 Commercial Zone.
As you can see here in the packet, we're asking to table this item. We're scheduled for public hearing for 2 days. The Planning Commission has tabled the preliminary plans for the Taco Bell, and the storage facility concept plan actually got denied in its conceptual phase, and they brought back a new rendering. We're going to work with them on that. So that's still in the Planning Commission phase. So we're both waiting for engineering approvals and for the Planning Commission approvals and recommendations for this body. Any questions on where those are at or what those are?
So Taco Bell and the storage unit conceptual plan for both?
No, the Taco Bell concept plan was approved. They made some minor modifications to the site plan, increasing the distance between the drive aisle and the road. There used to be a very narrow berm. They asked them to widen that, and they were able to do so. There's still some concern about the depth of the drive-through, how many cars are going to stack doing that without queuing the street. So they're still looking at some solutions on that too, how they can phase the project and see if that's not going to be an issue. But the Taco Bell, we're waiting on a number of items from the developers. On the Taco Bell side, we're waiting for updated elevations. They have elevations that they provided were standard Taco Bell that's just not going to fit with the commercials on here. So we've asked them to go back and do a new rendering on that. We're also asking for a landscape plan and a traffic study on the Taco Bell, showing that the parking that they're providing is adequate. On the storage facility, we need updated elevations on all four sides. We're asking for a light plan, especially what happens between the back of the building on the east side and the residents. We want to make sure that all those lights are low enough that they terminate, that the lumens terminate at the property line. And then we also want to see a traffic plan because we've got a very limited parking area, and we want to make sure that's sufficient. So they've got a number of things to do on their end, and then, like I said, we're still awaiting the engineering review of both of those site plans from Bowman and Collins.
These are all common items that we asked for in preliminary.
Yeah, there's nothing unique about anything that we're asking.
Any other questions? I will take a motion to table that item.
I will move that we table this item until Planning Commission has made their recommendations.
Motion made by Councilor Anderson. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second by Councilor Rennell. Are all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Moving on to item number 7, which is review action and public hearing on ordinance amending City Code 510, Chapter 5, Section 9, related to carports, landscape parks, containers, and accessory structures.
So this code is supposed to address two issues that we have. We get a lot of requests for carports, and a few of them throughout the city. We want to make sure to make a way where people can formally have allowed for a carport, and then to regulate those in a way that isn't a nuisance to the neighbors around them. Second, we wanted to address the issue of landscape park containers as they're becoming more and more frequent and requests saying, will the city like this or will the city allow this? Let's start with carports. In our code under 10.5.29, we are adding carports under this, showing the carports being only used for the parking sort of vehicles and recreational vehicles. We all want to see a carport where it's open on all sides and thereby used for storage of junk. So we want to regulate that. And then we're we're differentiating between a building that's an awning that would be attached to the side of the garage versus the carport that's not attached to the side of the garage. In either case, these buildings have to meet the building setbacks, whether they're attached or whether they're separate. But they also need to make sure that they drain water onto their property, not to an adjacent neighbor's property. We're only allowing a carport on the side or the rear setbacks of the property. We have, well, I thought was an odd request, was for a carport in front of the garage. So in front of your garage door, there'd be another carport there.
Permanently? A permanent one?
Yeah, I thought it was strange, but so we're limiting them to the side and the rear of the property. Regulating the width to be 24 feet, just to give you some perspective, 24 feet is the width of 2.5 parking stalls, so it's a decent amount of width. You can park two vehicles and then you probably park a, but you definitely park an RV, some of the larger recreational equipment in there. And then we're limiting the height to 20 feet. And even then, it can't exceed the height of the main dwelling. So as you go, if you go through the carport code, in the code you can see this, the addition is the red there. Any thoughts, any issues on the carport side? Joel, have you had a chance to look at this? Okay. So the Planning Commission looked at this for a number of months and gave us some good feedback. So that's the permanent structure. We're treating carports as permanent structures. Temporary structures would be the portable garages, and we're limiting the materials that can be used. We're saying that you can't use the canvas, the tarps, the plastic covers that get whipped around the wind, especially up here with the way that we have as part of a permanent structure in a regulated residential zone. And then those prefab carports that we've seen, they would also need to be receive engineering building permit.
Like that would be like the metal ones, the prefab metal.
Yeah. So usually when you buy those,
so they allowed, or I'm trying to.
They are allowed. Yes, they are allowed.
Just not the cloth.
Yeah. So the material would have to be like metal and
permanent.
So then let's move on to something that's the same. The Planning Commission is recommending that is not allowed to be the storage containers, freight cargo containers, as permanent structures. We've had people say, well, I want to put one of my out in my yard and have it be a shed. So what we're saying is that they can be, we don't want them as permanent structures, we don't want them as sheds, we don't want them in the front or the rear or the side setback, they're just out of that. But we do understand that there is a need for allowing them temporarily. So that's why we've carved out under Section 1 there, the fancy cargo containers, free provisions whereby someone could have a cargo container as a temporary structure on the property. For construction renovations, for example, when we had the Morgan Boulevard issue, it was homes were being renovated. They had a number of pods in the front of their house for a few months, actually, while those were being fixed. While they're placed there, we don't want them blocking public right-of-ways, we don't want them in the street, we don't want them easements that we may have to access. We're saying that storage containers are prohibited from being used as part of the residential or any permanent structure on the premise, so they can't be converted into buildable spaces, they can't be converted into accessory buildings.
So all those containers, they can't be on the street, and it says here that they can't be on required parking spaces, so does that mean they can't put it in the driveway either?
They can put it in the driveway.
So what's a required parking space?
That'd be your garage.
So the time limit says a week.
A week, and then you can get it. Yeah.
Extension.
You can get extensions on
up to 90 days if you're making progress.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay.
Any now the only issues? Caveat to that, I'm starting to see them be like if you drive down Geneva Road, you're actually making them into buildings.
Yeah, that was interesting. I
so if they do make it like up to code, I guess we wouldn't have a problem with that.
So
but when there's doors in there, I mean they
come. We're saying they can't be used as permanent structures. This was an interesting discussion the Planning Commission had. So let me relate a conversation I had with Craig Hall, the attorney who was just presenting. He was telling me that he's the land use attorney for South Jordan, and they had Starbucks come in and ask for a variance setback from the street. They're asking, the setback's 20 feet, they're asking for it to be 10 feet for their building. Because they're transporting it from another location, it's two cargo containers that they've renovated and they want to dump on the site and make it as a building. So we are seeing it, we haven't seen it so much in our city, but we are seeing it as a trend that people are wanting to. Yeah, there's a few of them. So we're saying it's becoming more and more of a trend. And so we're trying to address that. And if the council feels differently, if the council feels that these should be allowed and we should be able to maybe alter the outside appearance for them to be habitable as accessory apartments, I mean, that's something that we can address. So if that's something you want to talk about.
I think we could address that when they talked about tiny buildings. I think you can do a good job. Tiny homes or whatever. But I'm in favor of leaving it the way you revised it at this point.
Chandler?
Yeah, one thought. These are designed to be stackable. So they consider how high you can stack them on a yard.
We didn't. Not because, just because they're temporary. But, I mean, we can add something that prohibits them from being stacked. Because they're usually, what, about 8 to 10 feet high?
Right. But they are designed to stack.
Right.
Somebody might stack them all up.
Well, when they deliver them, though, they can stack them for you.
So you're going to get a foot restriction on there, because I can see something.
You could ask.
They have a 20-foot restriction, so you couldn't put more than two up, probably.
That's just on the carports, it's not on the
harbors. Oh, that's right, that's not on the zip.
Yeah.
I would prohibit stacking of these temporary containers.
So under A, I guess you could add, that's good. Add language just saying that cargo units may not be stacked on top of each other.
Yeah, I like that.
I'm going to change it to shall not be stacked on each other.
Any other questions on that ordinance or any other points you wanted to make, Chandler?
No. So if there's any other feedback, any other comments that you thought you had as you're reading through this?
Nobody wants their neighbor to have a cargo container sitting there being rusted. It's something that can be converted up to code. Whatever, you know,
we can cross that vision, we can discuss that. But temporary is fine. I think we're on the right track. Anything else from the council? Before I take the vote, we have it listed as a public hearing. So, we'll open the public hearing. Is there anybody here that wanted to like comment on that? We'll close the public hearing and move on to a vote. So just one more second motion.
I'll make a motion.
Okay.
I make a motion that we approve ordinance 2-5-2019A, amending City of Cedar Hill City Code 10-5-29 as it relates to carports and land sea cargo containers and accessory structures. Subject to the following change, adding the phrase cargo container shall not be stacked to the code.
Motion made by Councilmember Anderson. Is there a second?
Second
by Councilmember Ellsworth. Councilmember Bailey.
Aye.
Councilmember Miller.
Aye.
Councilmember Ellsworth.
Aye.
Councilmember Anderson.
Aye.
Councilmember Geddes.
Aye.
Motion is unanimous. Moving on to item number 8, which is the discussion of raising the minimum age to purchase tobacco products to 21.
Mayor Reese and I were approached by a group of Tobacco 21 that's promoting this initiative throughout the state. And they're wanting to have cities raise the minimum age of purchase of tobacco products to 21. They've gotten some traction from some other localities, but nobody's passed it as of yet. And I guess there's been some talk to the legislature that they're willing to explore statewide change if enough cities are showing interest in this. So it's just a discussion item tonight because I still think there's some missing information here. They provided a model ordinance that came from Rhode Island, and it's quite beefy. If you've had a chance to read it, but I want to look at the Utah code that allows us to do this, and I want to have Joel take a look at that in light of what's being requested. And Joel's looked at the model ordinance, and he had some good points I want to bring up, that we want to see what Utah code allows. And I shared Joel's concern. I sent this in an email to him, and I'm a little concerned about being the first city that does this. So there's not another city that's done this.
Not in Utah,
I should say. I don't know that there's a lot of opposition to it. Just doing it right, I think, is the concern here. But there is a real concern in our community as it relates to electronic cigarettes and the availability of those to teenagers. We saw that when we had the proposed tobacco specialty shop that wanted to build right across the street in high school. Fortunately, state code would not allow such a thing. So the city, in that case, we took the initiative and didn't outright ban the tobacco specialty shops, which that's not something we're probably going to get a whole lot of pushback from the community on, especially a community like ours. So I think that it's a good premise. I think it just needs to be done right. So looking at the Rhode Island ordinance, they have some language in here that just doesn't sit well with me at this point. If you have a chance to read it, it just says under the legal authority, it says, therefore, cities and towns in Rhode Island likely have the authority to enact a local tobacco 21 law. I really don't like the use of the word likely there. I really like it to be a definite issue. So that's why I want to see what some other cities are drafting as far as their ordinances are, how they're defining tobacco, how they're defining these shops, and how they're carrying out their ordinances. Another issue that Joel brought up that I really like is approaching Hearts and Walmart about it, asking them, because this group is saying that it's really easy and that these retailers really like it because it makes checking for IDs really easy, because if your ID is landscape versus portrait, then we know you're not 21. And so it really is seamless for them, where alcohol is 21, so this is just kind of streamlining the whole process. So I want to go maybe have a conversation with Hearts and Walmart and see what their feelings are as well, since they're the most impacted.
So I would add to that, they're not likely to want to reduce their consumer base for 2 years.
Probably true. Very true. But I think as far as bringing up the conversation with them, seeing what issues they may have, I think there's some validity there.
So council, I guess I'll tell you that Lehigh is hoping to pass something this month. There are several other Utah county cities that are very interested in it. So mostly we just need direction from the council on if it's something you're interested in us exploring or not. The big push, you saw this in your packet, the big push is that their studies are saying if you can get people from 19 to 21 to make that decision, the number of people who make a decision drastically goes down. And that there is the ability, just like the state has allowed us to ban tobacco specialty retail shops from our city, they're allowing cities to make that call on selling to under 21. So is it something that you're interested in pursuing? Is it something that you're not interested in pursuing?
So I'm interested in pursuing. I think that well, the fact that stuck out is that 95% of smokers start under the age of 21. So if we can make it more difficult for them to access what they need for smoking, whether it's traditional cigarettes or e-cigarettes or whatever, potentially we could help out some people. Now, they would still legally be able to possess it if
yes.
At 19, so at least the purchase or sale. That's still less stringent than other places. In the last several years, California raised their smoking age to 21. That's the entire state, I believe. That's for possession, that's not purchase or sale. And so even if we were to do something, which I think is along the lines of interest of our community, you know, we're still not going to be able to stretch people out there.
I'm in favor of doing it too. The language in these ordinances are kind of lucky. I don't think we need to put all the statistics on the information in there.
They have a lot of whereas.
Yeah, I think we can do without that, but, and obviously, if kids want to get a cigarette, so go somewhere else to buy it, but maybe if we do it, maybe our groups in each school can do it, and it might, you know, make it a little more difficult, but I'm looking for it.
I agree. I'm not too worried about being one of the first cities to do it. I recommend the challenge, we're just the city manager, we try to see what flavors are in our ordinance. I'm looking at this tobacco 21 website, so there are six states that statewide, they raised the tobacco age to 21, and then there's 430 cities in the United States, so we need to get some additional sample ordinances. I don't think that would be challenging.
Yeah, interesting to see the United States.
Did they say more was also for students?
Mayor Preston's, yes, yeah, they're interested as well, so I think it's worth reaching out to other cities and seeing where they're getting their language from, but, I mean, I'm not opposed to talking to Walmart and Harts, I just, again, it's reducing the number of people who are purchasing tobacco products from them, so I'm not sure that they're really, what we're really wanting to rely on.
They have different incentive than the city does.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
But I'd be interested to see what their position is in general, and to make sure that they all do that, driving their center behind it. Getting this, I thought it might be for city or one of the worst communities.
And I agree with everybody said, and I don't mind being the first to do, but I just think a nice simple ordinance, simply.
Oh, I see.
Six pages or.
Size of this ordinance.
I think one page is probably adequate, if you boil it down to one page, I think I'd be supportive of that.
And I completely agree with them. Personally, I don't think that anybody's going to disagree with us here. I would support that. But that's fair discussion.
One of the other things that the tobacco 21 group brought up, and Greg could probably weigh on this one, but they said it also extends, so they hire people under the age of either 19 or 21 to go try to purchase these products and make sure people are in compliance, and it would allow them to keep some of their people on longer, because people who are trying to purchase cigarettes, once they hit 19, they can't use them anymore, but if it's 21, then they can have them working on both sides and they can keep them on a little longer, so anyway. All right, do you have the direction you need?
Yeah, so I'm going to reach out to Lehigh, so I'd really like to get a model ordinance that works really well with Utah's code. I think that's the hang up here. So as we have that, that might be the first cities. I just want to make sure you cover that. Any other feedback?
Do you have any other bigger cities, you know, like in Salt Lake County, that are working on this too?
I haven't heard of any in Salt Lake County.
So we only found out that there's even an option when we went to a meeting. Or so, and I say the Utah County Mayor's, it was at the Utah Valley Health Department, so it was only for Utah County. We had no idea that cities had the ability to do this, and apparently it's because it's a new law that was passed by the state that cities could take that upon them. So
I'm a little surprised that I haven't heard of anything about it until then. It's distracting.
Yeah. So they were surprised that we were surprised, but we were all surprised. We need to figure something that was something that we could do. So I don't know about Salt Lake County, but I think we're technically those leaders pointing out.
I agree. I mean, if we can team up with a few more and just let
them
see how everybody's doing that.
Maybe I'll check on that one. Okay, Council, just one last item. I sent you an email yesterday. Last council meeting, we had that item on our agenda from a resident who leaves the state for an extended period of time and wanted us to waive some of the fees that the base fees that were charged. Chandra reached out to her and let her know the outcome of that. She looked at the packet and she felt that her points were not either sent to the council or raised by the council. It was the email that I sent you in December that I just forwarded you her email, so you saw all of her points. Anyway, she is asking for it to be on the agenda again in May, where she can actually make her points, because she feels like the council didn't get those. And so I told Chandler, I feel like the council's made a decision, so I'm not going to put it back on the agenda unless there are two of you that wish to do so.
Negative for me.
Yeah. So I can respond, or you can respond anyway.
Okay. I'll respond to her.
All right. Then I will take a motion to adjourn. Motion made by Councilmember Ellsworth, is there a second? Seconded by Councilmember Anderson, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, we're done.